Hey, happy Saturday, good morning, it's 10 a.m. and guess what time it is? It is time for Business and Legal Talk with Leo and Claudine, and I am your host, Leo Landaverde, and my co-host, Claudine. Good morning, what's
up? Good morning. Another rowdy Saturday.
Another day in paradise.
Hey, wasn't that last show awesome?
If you don't mind me saying, we rock.
I know, but it was great to talk about insurance.
Yes.
You know?
Thank you, Matt. It was great having Matt. And so this is, we're about, I know you enjoy, you know, hearing us talk from you know, every so often, but it is even better for you as an audience to hear our guests. And we really work hard at having experts in their field. So Matt, it was great. You know, we had some great vendors, payroll, merchant services, you know, health insurance. We're looking out, and today, special treat.
It is really special. It's super special for me.
Super special for me. So we have, I'm gonna just kind of tease you guys. We are in for a great show that you really need to listen to. And we're going to talk about that in a minute. But for now, Saturday, what's going on in our world? What's going on in your world, Claudine?
Just getting ready to see September come around the corner.
I know.
Fall is about here. You know, there's that point in time in August. And fall is my favorite season.
So is mine.
Really?
Yes.
My son as well. And my son and I, there's always that first day in August that you feel fall. And it's for whatever reason, it's something about the days are getting a little bit shorter. Maybe it's a little bit cooler. Not sure what it is, but every August, it hasn't happened yet, but every August there's that one day that I go, oh, I felt fall. It's coming.
You know, did I tell you that I went to school in the Midwest?
Yeah.
Yes.
Michigan.
So, Wisconsin.
Excuse me.
Close enough.
Sorry. Cold weather.
But I remember some of the funnest memories I have from college was at the start of the school year. And, you know, I went to the University of Wisconsin.
Right.
And the Great Lakes. And the temperature would be starting to kind of get into the 60s.
See, yeah.
It was just walking around campus and the
shadows.
Know, all the leaves are starting to fall and the beautiful shades. If you walk around in the highways, there are highways in the Midwest and the I-95, and you will see far all the beautiful colors of the rainbow, the yellows, the oranges, the blues,
and
the
green.
And that's what it was like for me. And then, of course, pretty soon, you know, there would be no more leaves on the trees. Right. And then you get the winter.
Right.
That's probably why I left. I loved the fall. I hated the winter. Right. And especially falling on black ice. That wasn't much fun.
Yeah. I'm California native. So
didn't
get a lot of that. You just got a little sense it was getting a little cooler, but it didn't get, you know.
Minus 20 degrees is no fun.
Good grief.
That's what it was sometimes.
20 degrees.
Minus. So below zero. Where you do ice fishing. That's how, you know, the kind of weather that I went to school in.
Did you ice fish?
I tried it. I think I got frostbite. Because you have to get the gear out there and you have to make sure that you have X amount of feet that you can stand on ice. And there's a formula and you have to drill to make sure, but you got to be able to almost park a car to be able to ice fish, you know, and it's solid ice and you have to drill. It was a whole.
It just seems like you just sit there in the cold. I mean,
the problem with ice fishing is that you're not moving.
You're just sitting
around.
That's what I'm saying. Outside in the cold.
And,
of course, I don't eat fish. So.
Lake Michigan and the Great Lakes are big enough to be oceans. I mean, this is.
Right.
It's just a different world. Anyway, how do we get to
the fall?
Okay, fall. You were saying fall.
It's gonna
all right.
Be
well,
here.
Okay. Well, let's bring it back.
Maybe next
bring
week. We'll check in on that next week.
We easily get off track. I'm sorry. Sorry about that. All right. So, so on our end, I think it's just, you know, I said it last week. I've been talking about it because planning, if you have a budget, if you're running your business on a budget, which I recommend any business, regardless of your size, you should look forward every year with a budget. You know, if you don't have a goal, any goal will do. And some of the most successful business owners I have, they have idea where they're going to be next quarter. They have the fourth quarter. They're already thinking about the rolling 12 months. So those are the kinds of things that you should be thinking about. I worried about on the profitable side. If you're not profitable, you got, you know, now we're getting into the third quarter and the fourth quarter, you need to extract some profit. There's no point, you know, there's no tax if there's no income.
Right.
But the goal is, you know, I think it's actually a good thing to pay tax. It's just to pay the lease, but you got to be profitable. But today is about the sustainability. Right. So what are we talking about today?
Are talking about estate planning today.
Yes.
Estate planning. And it's something that we deal with quite a lot in our industry. And surprisingly, it's one of the most difficult things for people to do.
Okay.
I can get people to come in and, you know, write a contract to buy a business, spend money, sell a business, you know, do very complicated things. But it's more difficult to get people to come in and do a living trust or do some estate planning. And I know that, you know, we really are empathetic with people because it is talking about, you know, life after you're gone.
Right.
But man, it is so important. You spend so much time building your business, building, you know, your life, your assets, your legacy. And a lot of people have a misconception of what happens when you die in terms of your belongings and your stuff. If you're married,
right.
Most people think, oh, it just goes to my wife. Not quite that easy. Things are not quite that easy. In addition, you have to take into consideration you and your wife or you and your husband may be in a car accident together. You may be on vacation together. And things have to, we need to have some instructions. The family needs to have instructions on what to do. And it's really a gift you're giving them. And so many people, we sit with them. I've sat with countless people across the table and have had to deal with difficult conversations. And it gets exponentially more complicated for people, not from a legal perspective, but just from a mental and emotional perspective,
yeah.
Is if you have children from previous relationships, and maybe you're married to a second spouse now, and you have children from previous relationships, it really is kind of heart-wrenching to decide how are we going to do this? How is this going to happen? And a lot of things get mixed up into it. So today we have Teresa Mason coming from my office, who is our estate planning attorney at our office. She's fantastic, incredibly empathetic, the sweetest person you could ever come across, and incredibly sharp as well. So she's going to stop by today and talk to us about living trusts and doing some estate planning, the benefits, the pitfalls, and see if we can't... you know, break through some of the misconceptions.
So before we get into that, I mean, I'm really excited about listening to Teresa talk just because there's a lot I don't know in general. And this is sort of a nebulous, you know, I find people in general resistant to talk about the topic.
Yeah.
Am I wrong in saying that?
No.
And if you feel that it's morbid, that is taboo. Do you find that?
Oh, incredible! I think I personally have had six consults with six separate clients who have some of them have paid already for their living trust, and they have not come back in to finish it. And we call and hi, how you doing? Just want to check in with you. But there's this resistance just because it's a difficult thing to deal with. And sometimes it's difficult for one reason and difficult for another person for another reason. But again, or there's children and we're not sure. I have one family who came in and they farm. And so they have two children and one of the children farms and the other child wants nothing to do with farming. And so in order to farm, of course, you need land. So the idea would be to leave the land to the child who farmed and then try to compensate the other child with maybe some other assets that they had. And so this whole thing becomes like an exercise in complication of how are we going to do this and still be fair and still make everybody happy and still not have the children fighting and still so on and so forth. So what we would like to do is communicate to the public and to the clients that this is all doable. It's a contract. We can contract for anything. We can set up anything. We can take care of it.
So if you're looking at, if you're listening to this show right now, we're talking about estate planning and we have Teresa Mason, who's going to be coming in the next segment. So you're getting all this great advice for free by just listening to our show. So pay attention.
Yeah,
and
don't
I think
let it go
this
by.
Is you cannot be successful without planning. And this is one of those things you got to plan for. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. You are listening to Business and Legal Talk with Leah and Claudine.
Awesome.
Back in 60. Welcome back. Wow. This month, there's always some types of shows that are somewhat like all about money and percentages. This is not one of those shows.
No.
But that doesn't mean it's not just as important.
Absolutely.
There's no point in making all the money if you don't know how to keep it and pass it on to the next generation. That sort of thing. That's what we have Teresa on here. So I'm very happy to have you. Good morning.
Thank you, Leo. Great to be here.
Great.
Love that voice, too.
Our
guests have got great voices.
We've been very lucky. We have all this great voices for radio.
Oh my goodness, we're gonna lose our spot.
It's a great place to be.
Aww.
So tell us about yourself.
So, you know, I grew up in the Bay Area, and then I did my undergrad up at Chico State, beautiful Butte County, the 530.
Yeah.
And then I came back to the Bay, and with my business degree, I worked a few different business jobs, which I really enjoyed. I learned a lot about running different businesses, and I decided to go back to law school because I figured a legal career is a great way to support businesses.
Yes.
And, you know, estate planning is really an extension of supporting businesses. And it's really near and dear to my heart. The Sharon Law Firm, we support small businesses in so many different ways. Everything from corporate formation to estate planning, employment law. There's just so many different areas. But employment law is a wonderful fit because it's all about protecting your families and your businesses and your legacy. And, the more time I've spent doing estate planning and helping families, you really realize how important it is. It's about protecting your assets and then basically making sure that you're making the decisions about who receives your assets at incapacity or death. So here in California, we have something called, we have intestate succession. So if you pass away without a will, it's going to go through the method of, it's called pers turbis, which is a fancy Latin word for by the root. So basically, what you want to do is have an estate plan in place, a will, a trust, an advanced health care directive, and a power of attorney, both medical and financial. That full package, it really can help put you at peace that, you know what, your instructions are laid out. And one of the most common questions we receive is, you know what, I can put together a one-page will.
Right.
But, you know, a will is a very thin layer above intestate succession,
and
it's more likely to go through probate. But a will, if it creates a properly funded trust, that can override probate. So, and often what prompts our clients to come to us is because they've had a loved one or a neighbor or someone pass away without a will, and they've entered that zone of intestate succession and having to go through probate. So avoiding probate is often the idea of why people come to us, because they say, I don't want my children and my beneficiaries to go through what I went through. So that's often why our clients reach out to us. But there's so many good reasons for setting up a trust and an estate plan.
Okay.
It's, you know, there's a variety. It's all about naming guardians to care for your minor children. You know, if you have children with special needs, or do you want to lay out those instructions for how your children will be cared for if something were to happen to you? And that's one of these ideas. One of the challenges of working in this field is because people are faced with their mortality, especially people with young children. Like Claudine referenced earlier, is people have to make decisions that are often difficult and hard to talk about.
Right.
So part of being an estate planning attorney is also being a counselor and providing ways to lay out that, you know, there is a plan for this.
Yeah.
And there's a way we can draft things to really incorporate your wishes.
How often do you find with meeting with someone who is interested in that they just have a hard time talking about it?
It's just across the board. It's our mortality.
It's universal.
It's universal.
I'm not the only one that feels that.
I have a 7-year-old daughter, and it's tough for me, you know, but I laid it out years ago because I'm just like, you know, I don't want anything up in the air.
Right.
You know? And it's also incapacity. You know, we forget that, you know, what if I was in a coma?
Yeah.
You know, who would make sure the bills were paid, the mortgage was paid? Who is to make sure my daughter was able to go to the school she goes to? Yeah. I mean, right. How would we maintain that consistency in her life? And those are decisions that need to be addressed now. And it's about the living. It's about the living. And I think that it's challenging to make these decisions, but I think the sooner the better.
So what are the, you know, we have to remember that whoever is listening to, they're not attorneys or are, we're just good at what we do, whatever product or service that we offer. So if we were to put it in buckets, what are the different buckets of the of estate planning that, who goes, I know you talked about advanced directives.
So there's a will, and basically a will is a document that lays out where you want your at, like when you pass away. There's that's an inter vitos transfer. So what happens is from there you can create a testamentary trust, which is that's in effect up until death, and then you can create a living trust. So with a living trust, it can be revocable or irrevocable, and those are terms that lay people don't always understand, so I want to provide a little clarity to that. So revocable is the most common form, because that means that the grantor, the person setting up the trust, can maintain control of those assets.
Can give and take away.
Yes, they can make changes to that trust. And those are the most common. So there's revocable and then there's irrevocable trust. So with a revocable trust, I like to look at it as it's like a bucket, right? So you can take things out and move things in and out of that bucket. An irrevocable trust is like there's a lid on that bucket. You put things in it and you seal that.
Is a trust, I mean, is this just an instrument? Is it a legal instrument?
It's a legal,
contract. So the world I come from, it's you know, corporations and LLCs and, you know, and partnerships. This is kind of a legal, the equivalent to?
Yes. So the idea, too, with a revocable trust versus an irrevocable trust is there's different motivations for why you would set up an irrevocable trust versus a revocable trust. So one of the motivations for people setting up an irrevocable trust is they want to avoid capital gains taxes. They want to protect assets from nursing homes. That's a common one. So, you know, that's part. You know, part of this is reaching out to your tax professional. It's all about having a check-in with your tax professional to stay up to date on some of these things.
Do you work in concert with the CPAs, to the tax side of things?
Yes, to definitely make sure that what's best for you and your family and your it's a business plan. So that's
very
important.
A lot of people don't realize that a living trust, hence the word living, is there to function while you're alive. And unless you've been in that situation where, say, your child, let's say you have a teenage child who gets in a car accident. Well, that's actually not a very good example. Let's just say it's your spouse and you are next of kin, but there is a process that people have to go through in order to start making medical decisions on their behalf.
And that's an advanced healthcare directive.
And that process, if you do it ahead of time, is as easy as filling out the document. However, if you haven't done it ahead of time, let's say you and your wife are driving down the road and happen to be in a car accident and she's incapacitated, the process by which you have to go through to be able to make decisions on her behalf is not always easy. Particularly then let's just say it's mom or dad, and mom or dad live alone. My mom lives by herself. And if something happens to her, if she gets into a car accident, the process that we as children would have to go through in order to be able to make decisions on her behalf without this document being in place ahead of time is very complicated.
So a trust is like rules of engagement?
Yes.
Yes. It's a roadmap. It's a roadmap.
It's a roadmap.
It's a roadmap.
Okay.
It's a roadmap both for the living and for the surviving.
Right.
That's the way I'd like to look at it. And one of the benefits of the Advanced Healthcare Directive is it's very specific. It talks about, you know, things like end of life. Is there, you know, some of these, like I said, some of these things are hard to talk about, but does this person have cognitive function? What measures are we going to do to keep this person alive? Like, what are their wishes? Like, you know, I have a large family, and I think sometimes there's a lot of cooks in the kitchen, and people can be very emotional. And one family member might say, well, mom wanted this. And right. another family member might say, no, well, mom wanted this.
So how do you decide which is which?
But when you have that document that say, actually, mom said what she wanted, right? And for most people, to have that document in place gives them peace that, you know what, once I've passed away, there I won't leave behind these squabbles between my kids or my grandkids. And there's a peace to that.
Yeah. If you've ever spoken to somebody who works in the probate industry, whether it's a probate judge or referee, anything, probate is just can be a nightmare. And it goes on forever and ever. And we think Teresa's working with a client now that the probate is now 7 years. 7 years?
7 years.
Yeah. Millions of dollars are tied up.
Yeah.
Hey, so I hear, you know, it's always fascinating where you know, some people live vicariously through the rich and famous, and you know, A&E, and people talk about trust fund babies and all this. So how does all that, is that a tool that the rich use to basically have ownership of other entities? Can you walk us through how that looks like?
So part of setting up a trust is you can lay out for your beneficiaries guardrails, so to speak, of how your beneficiaries will receive money, especially with children, adult children. And this is one of the reasons I'd say that people need to update their trust frequently and have a check-in, you know, set it on the calendar. You know,
how often? Once a year?
I think so. Once a year is appropriate. What's going on in our life? Why should we update it? Because you set up a trust when a child's 10. Well, when they're 25, there's going to be different things going on in the family. Right. You want to make sure back to trust fund babies. You can lay out that they're going to receive, they'll receive distributions at 25 and 35 and 40. And you can lay out the amounts of those distributions. There's so many different ways you can structure a trust to protect sometimes the beneficiaries from themselves. Sometimes there might be a child that, you know, isn't very motivated. Maybe they develop a drug or alcohol or a gambling problem, or who knows, some
or addiction. Just simply entitled.
Yes, or simply entitled. Yeah. So, you know, that's why I say, you know, coming up with an estate plan, it's not a set it and forget it. Like, you need to revisit it frequently and see what's going on with the family. See if your plans now and what your needs are now match. They're probably not going to match what they were 15 years ago. Another element is making sure that if you've bought and sold properties, that those properties have been properly placed into the trust.
That's something that we should explore a little more.
Yeah, yeah. It's a common problem that we face when people set up a trust, is that they don't do what we call is funding the trust, which is back to Teresa's analogy of the bucket. We didn't put anything in the bucket.
So it's an empty trust.
So it's an
empty trust will go through probate.
Yeah.
A
properly funded trust is the key.
So here's something that I remember. So when you have a property in a trust and you're trying to refinance it, why do some bankers say you need to take it out of the trust and then put it back? How does that all that work? Have you heard of?
I would get a second opinion if they're taking you to remove something from a trust, because there's tax implications.
There's not just the risk, but there's a tax.
Tax implications for taking something in or out of a trust. If it's,
And sometimes you do need to pull it out because of the way it's titled.
Yeah.
So, and depending on what we're doing, like for example, refinancing, you're getting the loan under your individual, your own personal name and credit and so forth.
Which your personal guarantee.
Right. And so the mortgage companies understand that you can transfer title to a trust. It doesn't trigger an acceleration clause. So that's important. My husband and I own our property. We own it in our personal names. When we go to move it into our trust, technically that transfers the interest and it would trigger the acceleration clause, but mortgage companies understand that as long as, and my husband and I are the beneficiaries, we're really not transferring the interest. Mm-hmm. It's just a name change. So that doesn't trigger it. But so sometimes if you're going to refinance it, you have to refinance it in your personal name. When it's in the trust, it's not in your personal name. So sometimes that's the reason. But typically, Teresa's correct. You do need to stop and breathe before you make that move, because there can be tax implications.
Okay, so there's a lot more to cover. I just have this question. So who is the ideal candidate for a trust?
An ideal candidate is anyone that has assets that they want to leave instructions for.
You don't
for
have to be married. Yeah, you can be single.
You don't have to be married. You can be single. Anyone that has assets that they want to make sure that the federal government, the state government, doesn't make decisions for where those assets go.
So can you ever be too young to get a trust?
18.
18. Okay. All right. Well, there's a lot more to come. Hopefully this is helpful. You are listening to Business and Legal Talk with Leo and Claudine, and we're talking to Teresa Mason, who is an expert in estate planning. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Business and Legal Talk with Leo and Claudine. We're having such a delightful time, if I may say, talking about estate planning and how and why you should be paying attention to us. I think you need to drop everything you're doing right now. Even if you're at the supermarket, go to your car and listen to the show and take notes.
Absolutely.
Because this is great content.
Yes.
Wow.
You know what? And if you do nothing else, ask as many people as you possibly can if they have ever experienced a probate. If they have ever been through it, whether it be a family member, friend, whatever, and ask them, what was that experience like?
Thank you, Claudine. An experience of a loved one going through probate leaves a memory, and it's not a good one. For a property that's subject to probate administration, for example, a property that's $200,000, $7,000 of attorney's fees will reduce the value of that property. Then you have executor's commissions. So your total fees and commissions would be $14,000 on a $200,000 property.
That's $200,000.
That's mandatory, statutory.
Non-negotiable.
There's no negotiable, and it's court ordered. So when you go through the probate, at the end of the probate, the court orders.
You do not want to go to probate.
And if you have a house in the Central Valley, your estate is easily worth $200,000. I mean, so just look at
minimum.
Just look at your house.
In California, the dirt alone without the house is worth that.
Exactly.
Yes, exactly. Not to mention bank accounts. I mean, it just goes up.
Yeah.
Bank accounts.
So let that resonate for just a second. If you have an estate that's worth $200,000, and your estate has to go through probate because you didn't take the time to set up a living trust ahead of time, it is a $14,000 bill. So if it's $400,000, you know the numbers.
So a few thousand dollars for putting together a proper estate plan is a drop in the bucket compared to what you would be paying. Your heirs would be paying. They'd be suffering, so to speak.
Well, they have to sell everything to pay it. So if the house is worth $200,000, that house is not liquid. So of course, in order to pay the mandatory probate fees, and they're mandatory, that property has to be sold. So if you have a property that you want to leave to your children, or maybe you have a couple of properties, maybe you have a couple of children. I know a number of people in my age category have a few rental houses, and they've tried to build. And, you know, one child maybe will get one rental house and another child will get another. You created exponential costs if you had three houses.
And not to mention, the state of California, I don't think it's likely to reduce any of these fees.
No,
they're going to go the other direction. So
why would they?
Time is really of the essence.
Right.
So during the break, we were talking about celebrities and one in particular, going through probate. Tell us.
Prince. So
yes,
Prince, what's up? Prince apparently left behind a $300 million net worth. That's between royalties, properties, bank accounts, etc. And he died without a will or an estate plan. It was intestate. So that is going through probate. And, you know, I'm not up on TMZ or I'm not up on celebrity news these days, but I did hear that some people came out of the woodwork and suddenly they were related to Prince. So
So how does that work? Like, if you're in probate, would walk us through the, like, how... there's a judge, or there's somebody, a trustee or somebody who's assigned to it?
Well, there's a probate commissioner, okay, and someone's assigned to the case, and they have a huge caseload, and you know, things are scheduled and calendared, and there's filings.
Hearings,
and it can go on for years, and yeah. And
so what are the chances of this state settled in the next few years?
It'll probably take like a decade.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
A decade?
At least.
What happens to the assets while this is going on?
It's just being depleted. And in his situation, you're going to have record companies fighting. Yeah. You're going to have multiple high stakes people in that probate administration. So it's just going to get, the can will continue to get kicked down the road. So any legitimate beneficiaries, any of his family members will suffer.
Right.
Wow. Like they might be left with very little if he'd had a proper estate plan put together.
The thing people don't realize about probates versus living trusts, probates are made public. So whenever you have a probate opened, you have to start running those public notice ads in the newspaper. And it says, anybody who may be a beneficiary of Leo Landaverde.
Or a creditor,
please show up to the hearing on this date. I'm summarizing, but you know, essentially we publish it to notify the public. And then anybody who says Leo owed me $300 from 1989, and I have proof of this payment that was owed to me, then you present that to the court. And so the court goes through all of these things, and it gives everybody time to be a creditor and come in and stake their claim. That process alone for an estate like Prince's, that process alone.
And unfortunately, we live in a time where bad actors come out of the woodwork.
Right.
Claims that are just totally fabricated will come out. And it's so disheartening that there's people out there doing that. But with all the identity theft and just dishonesty out there, unfortunately, that's yet another reason why it's important to have an estate plan to protect your beneficiaries.
So let me redirect the cover. So you have this enormous, right, sums of money sitting there now in probate. And let's go to the opposite side. You got somebody who is going to go to LegalZoom. Okay, can I get this done for pennies on the dollar? What would you say to someone like that who is trying to get it for next to nothing?
You know, the thing about LegalZoom is people want to get things done quick. We live in a world where people want instant results. And sometimes taking extra time and investment in your estate plan is well worth it. I mean, I have clients that have come to me with something they came up with through LegalZoom, and they're like, you know, I wanted to make changes to it, and I had to call the 1-800 number, and they kept bumping me around, and I don't even know if the person was in the United States, and they were just so frustrated. So then I look at the document, and I'm like, well, we're going to need to amend this, but really we need to restate it, because there's a whole series of things that you thought were in here that are not.
Right.
So it's not, estate planning doesn't lend itself to a plug and play. Like, it really lends itself to conversations about someone's intent and what their wishes are.
You know, I can speak to on the accounting side of things. So I had I met with a potential, you know, I'm talking to business owners all the time. So I was talking to somebody who heard about me and got him on the phone and blah, 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 blah. Hey, tell me about your legal, you know, your legal entity. Oh, I have a S Corp. Oh, great. So I'm taking notes. So we started engaging. And then how long have you been in business? A couple of years. Well, a couple of years as a sole prop, and I incorporated, blah, blah, blah. So I'm looking at the timelines. Okay. So I asked him, I need to see, you know. So, okay, I let's engage. Let's work on, let's work together. The first thing I do is taxation. I'm always asking, okay, so, you know, I'm looking at the financial statements against the actual legal entity and all the timely and all the timetables, mm-hmm. right? If you're a corporation, you must file by the March 15th every mm-hmm. year. And then there's the 415 deadline. Anyway, long story short, so you're an S Corp, so there should have been an 1120 S form filed, because by default, all corporations are C corporations, which is right. The large corporations, which mm-hmm. are subject to double taxation, unless you elect to be treated as an S Corp, which is a sub or a small corporation. Guess what? They did it in LegalZoom. They swore up and down that they had this 1120S election, and they didn't. So a year and a half after, nobody caught it. So they had to restate. They actually, you basically at this time, you have to throw yourself at the mercy of the state and ask for forgiveness a pardon so you can actually file this of Chapter S, you know, election with the IRS. And that was just not good. I know what it feels like, because then you have to restate, you have to refile. There's just a lot. And that's only, you know, money and not to diminish it, but we're talking about life situations here.
Yeah, you don't want to leave your beneficiaries with a document that's confusing and doesn't match up with the intent of the grantor. So it's disheartening, I should say, that we have these documents floating around that it's almost like a time bomb, because decades from now, they're actually going to need to look at this trust and administer it. And how do they do it?
You know, I had a case, it took us about a year to wrap it up. And it was about, I think 2 years ago, we started with it. It was a property out in Patterson, and a family had owned like the entire block where the house was located at one time. And then, you know, members of the family had passed away. The woman who had passed away had a living trust. The property was in the living trust, and there was an issue with the property line, like a building, the garage was halfway on the property line, and we were trying to sell the property on behalf of the trust. And we went into escrow, we found a buyer, went into escrow, and then, as I recall, the title company came up and realized that there was this issue with the property line in any event. And then they realized that there was a deed that had been skipped back in like 1935 or something.
Wow.
It was a long, long time ago. And what had happened is that the owners originally had it individually. Then they moved it into the trust. And then they sold it. And then it went into another trust. And in any event, we ended up having to go back to a third generation's living trust. The
really?
Family still had it. It took us a long time to get it unwound. But because the trust... that document, it was clear instructions on who was supposed to own the property in the event of the death. And that's what happened, is there was a missing deed somewhere along the line. And
wow.
Of course, this is before computers.
Mm-hmm.
But because this document was considered to be an important document by the family, they never threw it away. It was just a stroke of luck that we actually were able to have it. But it is, you know, considered an important document, and it didn't get thrown away.
So it's interesting, like our technology has progressed, but LegalZoom isn't progress.
Right.
And I think people are looking for economy, and then years down the road, people are going to suffer. It's back to what you were saying earlier about pain or vitamins.
Yes.
Leo, you know, like... do we want to take our vitamins now, or do we want to have pain later?
Pain medication,
you know,
later.
And really, it's better to spend more time up front and get things right. Get the details in order.
Successful people are proactive, in my experience. Right. Hey, I have a question. So what is the biggest misconception out there that you keep running into about estate planning?
I think a lot of people think, estate planning is for wealthy people. And I think maybe that comes from the idea trust fund babies, or estate planning is for, you know, billionaires or people that own multiple businesses. And it's like, no, estate planning is for everyone. Estate planning is for anyone who wants to have peace about leaving a roadmap for how their beneficiaries will inherit their assets. And also, estate planning is about taking care of families in case of incapacity.
So
I have a question.
Not just for the rich.
Not just for the rich. It's for everyone.
Yeah, it really is for everyone. Explain to people who may not know, what if somebody came to you to draft a living trust, what components, what would they walk away with?
Well, we have, based on their situation, are they a single person or are they a couple?
Right.
We have different forms to fill out. And a lot of it is decisions. Like, how do you want things formatted? What are your wishes? Who are your beneficiaries? What are your properties? And how do you want things structured? And just laying out the different decisions. And, you know, it's a conversation.
Hey,
it's like, we're not just going to hand you the forms and send you on your way.
Hold that thought, Teresa. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to cut you out. We have to go to break. So,
okay.
So it's my producer raising his hand. So, stay tuned. We'll be right back. I know this is juicy stuff. Stay tuned. Come back. Hey, What's up? Welcome back. Man, there's never enough time. I just barely getting started, and I feel like we're going to have to start winding it down. So, hey, how do we find you? I mean, how do we get to you? This is great, actionable content.
So the Sharon Law Firm, we have locations both in Modesto and Turlock. In Modesto, we're on Standiford, and you can call us. We're at area code 209-427-2200. And, you know, we serve the entire Central Valley, so we're happy to drive. If you need estate planning help in Stockton, Tracy, Fresno, Visalia, you name it, we'll
awesome.
Drive.
Awesome. And so, I highly recommend the work that you guys do. It's so, you know, we team up with a bunch of clients, and it's just clients rave about your services. So thank you for all you do. So clearly there are more benefits to what we're talking about that beyond the scope of what, you know, our show today. But if you're the average person who just walked into your office and got the estate planning done, what am I walking away with? Can you kind of walk us through, what does that look like? What am I holding in my hand?
So our estate plan involves a will, a trust, that's a living trust, an advanced healthcare directive, and then a power of attorney. That's both for healthcare, that's both for medical and for financial. So it comes in a beautiful book, and it's all laid out there. It's all organized. Like, your family, your beneficiaries will go to that, and there will be no questions about where anything is. It's all there. It's organized, and it'll just give you a sense of peace. You'll walk away with all the roadmaps for your beneficiaries. So, yeah, I just really believe having it all taken care of in a estate plan, it's all about leaving a legacy of peace. And it's for the living. After you have an estate plan set up, there's a sense of peace that, okay, my affairs are in order. And that's something so wonderful. But I also want to stress that, you know what? It's not a one and done. We're about at the Sharon Law Firm, we're about a relationship. So, you know, we're all about we encourage you to check in with us periodically as life changes, as you might buy or sell properties. Maybe you invest in real estate. Maybe children are getting married. Maybe there's grandchildren. Anytime you want to make a change to your estate plan, like, stay in touch with us.
This is not once and done and walk away. Mm-hmm. I think you, as if anything you do in life, you know, you got to inspect and keep coming back to it. Hey, so here's a nice little fact. I was just looking this up. Check this out, that the state tax will raise $225 billion, that's with a B, over the next 10 years. This is more than $164 billion 10-year shortfall in the Highway Mass Transit Trust Funds.
Mm-mm-mm.
That's how profitable it can be for the state if you let things go to probate, right?
But I think if people thought of it as a tax, they would be a lot quicker to overcome the apprehension that you have when you're thinking about going through that process.
I think,
if you said to yourself, this is a tax, I mean, $200,000 and you're going to pay $14,000. That's a lot.
I know, but check this out. So let's go to the other side. What happens when you're shrewd about how you're looking at this and you're worried about cost, which we're going to talked about in a second, is the Walton family, you know, that Sam Walton, you know, that owns
Walmart.
51% of the shares of Walmart, has exploited a loophole in the state tax law to avoid paying $3 billion in state taxes. This could increase by tens of billions in the future. So when it's done right, I always say, you know what, don't reinvent the wheel. Look at what successful people have done in every area of their life and just mimic that.
Right.
Emulate what they want to do. So I know people are thinking, you know, or as they're listening to the show, is, well, how much is this going to set me back? Well, I can, you know, I'm going to let you respond to that.
So it's a few thousand dollars to come up with a full estate plan, but it is so worth its weight in gold. Not only are you avoiding probate, it's that peace that you're going to give your family. And successful people plan ahead. And this is just one element of success.
Yeah.
So what's the alternative? $14,000 plus in the regulatory mandated fees, right?
Exactly. And
on $200,000.
Or $200,000 in probate. It's just, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. And keep in mind, I think I said this earlier, just a reminder, those are mandatory fees. You will liquidate the assets. So if it's grandma's diamond ring and, you know, whatever, or the house, you know, your childhood home, if you have to liquidate the asset in order to pay those fees, that's what you'll be doing.
Wow.
You don't get to, you either write the check or you liquidate the asset and write the check. But you're writing the check either way.
And also, it's the squabbles between family members.
Yes.
I cannot emphasize enough that grandma's ring isn't just grandma's ring.
It's your
attachment to it. And that's why these probates drag on and on, is because there's these unnecessarily filings and delays because people have emotional attachments to stuff. And it's like, you know what? The grantor, while you're living, lay that out. Who's going to get what and when? And what, you could even put why they're going to get it.
Yeah,
you know?
And this is relative to business owners who maybe have a corporation and have shares and want to transfer business.
Exactly.
You know, we've talked about buy-sell agreements and making arrangements for your exit plan. This is a piece of that as well, and very well can be, depending on who your beneficiaries and, you know, if maybe your son or daughter is planning to take over your business and so forth. That's another piece of the business exit plan.
You know, I am a former 90210 junkie, and Luke Perry unfortunately passed away this last year.
Yeah.
But, you know, and he
what happens to his estate?
He had an estate plan. It was all laid out because people were starting GoFundMe. People want to start GoFundMes to raise money for his daughter. And it's like, no, his family released a statement saying, you know what? There's no need for any sort of a GoFundMe. Luke laid everything out in a carefully crafted estate plan.
Really?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I love Dylan. Anyway, okay. I digress, but he was, I want to say 50.
Yeah. I think he died at 50.
Yeah.
He's our.
Yeah. But He planned ahead, though, you
he
know,
did.
And I
funny,
was
you
so
haven't heard
happy.
Any word about squabbling.
None.
Family.
None. Carefully crafted. Taken yeah. care of. Peace. It's peace for his heirs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he left, eight young kids, right?
A few children.
Few children.
He left behind a sizable estate, though. He was on television for a few decades. I mean, he was on television.
Well, 90210 all alone.
90210, the royalties.
Been running for.
Yeah.
But see, and that's the thing, is his estate will continue to generate mm-hmm. funds.
Right.
Even though yeah. he's passed away. So if you had nothing, then it would be an additional complication going through the probate process, because now we have to make a decision. Mm-hmm. What are we going to do with the future income that's coming? It's not just what we have sitting in our lap today. There's income coming down the pike still.
Yes.
So what else will what else do you think we need to talk about that we haven't covered on the show today that you want listeners to pay attention to?
I really want listeners to know that, you know, here at the Sharon Law Firm, when we put together an estate plan, we're all about personal service and really tailoring an estate plan to your family's needs and the legacy you want to leave behind. So I think for us, it's about a relationship. It's not, these aren't just documents to us. This is about leaving a legacy. Mm. And we take pride in that. So I think that's what I'd like the listeners to understand.
And I'm going to just pitch in on that. Well, one of the things that the reason why Teresa is so good and why I did want her to come on the show and talk to people about this, because one, we're passionate about it. We are passionate about being proactive. You and I, mm-hmm. crafted the show around it.
Yep.
Teresa has that personality that I think she said in the very beginning, there's a little bit of counseling that happens in here. Mm. And not everybody is cut out to hold hands with a client, figuratively, of course, and walk through this. It can be difficult. It can be a little painstaking, and not every personality is. And I really want to just kind of throw a shout out to Teresa for being that kind soul, that gentle person who is very, very empathetic and is really good at helping people walk through this process.
Oh, thanks,
so there's
Connie.
The technical aspect, and there's mm-hmm. also the empathetic, mm-hmm. you know. So I think you balance both well.
Yeah.
I would not be able to do it. I lack the... It's just wired differently, but I appreciate, I hear the work that you're doing. So thank you for, in illuminating us with the knowledge that you have. So aside from being a great, aside from watching 90210, what you know, how else do you take your mind off things?
I
know
hike.
This is a personal thing. So.
I hike, I garden. The Central Valley is great for gardening. I got a huge tomato crop going on.
Oh,
right
you do?
Now,
you? So, oh, you do?
Yeah, yeah.
I haven't seen any at the office
and some
yet.
Fruit trees, yeah. No, I brought in some peaches this morning.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, those were yours.
Yeah.
Really?
So, yeah.
Oh, tomatoes. Yeah. Oh, a tomato field.
Aren't you into gardening too?
No, I hate gardening.
You're into horses.
I am
right.
into horses. I would rather go to the farmer's market and buy the tomatoes. I love them. I used to grow them. But then I just came to a decision one day that I said to myself, let's just be honest. I just don't like doing this. I just don't like those but big green bugs.
But you enjoy doing it. I do enjoy it, yeah. But
so you must have a lot of patience to watch. It's like watching things grow, right?
Yeah.
So you have it in your backyard? You
yeah. Have a, I have some plant, some raised beds back there, yeah.
I have the opposite of a green thumb. See, what would that be? A black thumb? Like, kill everything. Like, you know, I just
I don't even. I don't even like. I mean, I'll mow the yards, but that's the extent of my landscaping and gardening ability.
It's always an experiment, though, right? Like, some varieties are doing well, and some of them, there's just like no blossoms. I'm like, I don't know what's going on there. So it's just a work in progress.
So how do you discover that you enjoy that? So do you just had nothing to do and just walk to the yard and said, I should do something with this yard?
You know, I was into, at different points in my life when I had an apartment, I would have little pots where I would try to grow things like herbs and like basil and just different herbs for cooking. And then I'm like, okay, then, but then when you can put in a full bed, it's like the possibilities are endless. Yeah.
That's awesome.
And it's a little bit of an escape, too.
Do you start with a seed and just, or you just buy them little? Or
you know, I did do some of the seeds that you start in like March, but I've had more success with, to be honest, like the Lowe's and Home Depot little.
The 6-inch pot.
The 6-inch pot. Yeah. Then really? The actual seeds. But I do both. I do both. I'm always like kind of cheering on those
and
seeds.
You hike.
Come on, you can do it.
And you hike.
And I hike, yeah.
Wow. Man, you know, I have to go to the gym and just it's all about cardio now. Yeah. You know, I think and there's nothing better for cardio than hiking. I mean, you know.
Those hills.
Have you ever, do you go around here or do you go to one of, you know, the big mountains, the peaks?
I like to go to the foothills, kind of like up by Sonora, up foothills of Yosemite. Yeah.
Wow. Uh-huh. Half Dome coming your way?
Oh, no, I haven't done Half Dome. My dad did that. I'm like, no, I haven't done Half Dome.
How long does it take to get up there?
It's like a day.
Yeah, it's a trek.
It's like you start in the morning and get back at dark.
So it's a feat if you're actually able to do it.
Oh, no, it's a feat. You don't just wake up and think I'm going to hike Half Dome. You
There's
prepare.
Like nets. It's hardcore. There's like a risk.
Yeah.
Now
you prepare.
But people fall off that too.
Yeah.
And there's a point where you actually are literally on the rock and there's this thing that gets you. And anyway, we're digressing. Well, thank you so much, Teresa, for being on the show. Another great show. And again, where do we find you? Let's wrap it up with, you know, how do we get to Teresa?
The Sharon Law Firm. We're in Modesto and in Turlock, and we travel throughout the Central Valley. You can reach us at area code 209-427-2200.
Great. Well, you know how to reach us too at greenlandhq.com, www.greenland, as the country of Greenland, HQ. For headquarters, and it's been a great having you. Thank you, Claudia.
Great show. Yeah,
what
thank
a great
you.
Thing,
everybody
Teresa.
Can meet Teresa. Yay. We're so glad to have her.
A great weekend, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye.